Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yak.
It's time for What Mark Heard on Saturday Suckage with Mark Grody and Steve Rosenblum.
Boy, everyone is stupid except me.
And everyone is listening, even me. It's time for our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard, with Mark Grody. I was probably answering one of the many texts from Spilkis, and you just, you know, and the program director and the when the Ubermacher texts you, you have to keep responding, and it just goes on and on and on. Well, you know that.
I've been guilty
of doing it.
No need to apologize. I just think it's fun because I've been called out for doing that. The last time I worked with Mully, I think, Mully asked a question to a guest, and then I asked the same question afterwards. He's like, what are you doing? And we had a good chuckle over it. So I have been there. I just want, like, I feel better when other people do it. So you did it, and it's okay, and I'm glad that you're dealing with Mitch, and I don't have to. So there we go. Thank you, Steve. I owe you an apology
right.
And a thank you.
I deal with Spilkis, yeah. So you don't have to.
Yes.
It makes me an American hero.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right. This is our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard. So let's roll, baby.
Let's do it. Olin Kreutz was on the score yesterday with Danny and Matt. Parkins and Spiegel is the name of the show. And I thought it was a great question to ask Olin Kreutz. What is it that Justin Fields is responsible for in terms of the Bears' offense being not good?
It's not really disappointing. I'm just watching a young quarterback grow, right? And he dropped in the draft. We knew watching him at Ohio State that he held on to the ball. So I'm not disappointed. I'm just waiting for him to stop, to come out of that, to learn that the ball has to come out quicker. Even on RPOs, he doesn't get the ball out faster. But I mean, run pass options where the line can be down the field. He's got to have a little more urgency when he hits his back step and get the ball out. You know, he did improve. He was dropping too deep in the pocket, and he did improve. He started stepping up there. So I have seen him read blitzes, but the thing that he's struggling with, guys, that's why, you know, Wilson went before him. That's why Lance went before him. You have to know that this is what he was going to struggle with. And if you are up there at Halas Hall, if you're the general manager and you look at the owner and Ted Phillips and George McCaskey, say, we're going to take this guy, but this is what he needs to improve on. We're going to trade up and get him. But we have to coach him on the fact that the ball has to come out sooner in the NFL, that he has to process information sooner. He does hold on to the ball a little bit in that pocket. So that is not shocking me at all. So I can't say I'm disappointed in that. All I will say is I'm waiting for him to get better at it.
So I guess that's not surprising, but very honest, Steve. What do you think about that?
I do think that's a legit criticism, and I'm with Olin. I've often sided with Justin Fields holding on to the ball because he thinks check down or touchdown to check down.
Yep.
And that's what Matt Nagy is always talking about. So Matt Nagy seems to be, you know, hypocritical. He seems to be double talking of, well, we want him to think touchdown, but we want him to get rid of the ball. Well, you're really not going to do that. I just, it doesn't work. So So I like Justin Fields' instincts, but we are seeing at least one scouting report come true. Unfortunately, Dane Brugler was writing about him in The Athletic, and I saved it because I wanted to see just what transferred and what was progress, right? Isn't that what Olin was talking about?
Yep.
Progress?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, undeveloped field this is the weakness. Undeveloped field vision. Locks onto his preferred read and doesn't consistently find his second and third options, sometimes by design. Needs to be quicker eliminating things post-snap. Needs to be better taking what the defense gives him instead of forcing throws. His passes lose life when attempting to throw off balance. Well, who's dumb? You know. Ball security needs work, and that's another part of it. He fumbled a lot. So we're seeing that play out. And the being able to read defenses, which is post-snap, and have it process quicker, that's what we're seeing. And
yep.
You saw that with Mitch Trubisky. This has a bit of Trubisky stench to it. And it was what I said when they drafted him. We did a show, and I said, whatever Justin Fields brings, all the advantages, everything that looks like an NFL quarterback, he has the stink of being chosen by Ryan Pace, who hasn't been right about a quarterback yet. And I know there's nothing really material. There's not anything scientific about it. But Ryan Pace's history is he doesn't know anything about drafting a quarterback. And there may be a reason this guy fell in the draft. There may be a reason he was the fourth of five quarterbacks taken. And I keep coming back to that. And I want to not come back to that. I want to see progress. I'm with Olin. And with a team that sort of feels like it has to make the playoffs, but maybe not, what's that prism like? How do you look at it, Mark? How do you see that? With waiting for progress, but seeing an NFC that is, you know, you can get another one of the mercy playoff spots the way you have the last couple of years with a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to keep on, you know, if he wasn't benched in the Green Bay game or after the Cleveland game, then it's not going to happen. Or the Tampa Bay game, I should say. I'm already forgetting. I've already put that out of my brain. If it wasn't going to happen in the second half of the Tampa Bay game, they are sticking with what they said, that they're going to he's the starting quarterback through the good and the bad, and obviously things change if there is to be an injury. What he is lacking is, and I guess this falls under the category of, you know, reading defenses, he has a lack of awareness. The presence of mind is not there. When Antoine Winfield viciously is, I mean, quarterbacks are going to get sacked, and especially blindsided, and, you know, safety blitzes can be tricky, as can any dialed-up linebacker blitz or what have you. But the good seasoned quarterbacks recognize those things more times than not, and the Bears simply as a collective did not. Here's what it is before we get on to the next cut. It's going to be he's going to be truly evaluated. Like, I don't think – I understand what you're saying about Ryan Pace's history with quarterbacks. I do think that Justin Fields is still going to be really good. And I think that he is going – we're going to see it in from the beginning of training camp next year. Yeah, I'm sorry, Bears fans. You're shaking your head in your car right now, like, wait till next year. But that's when he – seriously, that's when he truly takes over the team. From day one of training camp next year, when Andy Dalton is not there, when Nick Foles is not there, and he is the quarterback, the guy, period. End of sentence. So that's what you have to wait for. And in the meantime, I think these are fair critiques of a guy who I think that a lot of people thought, and I think we all had that weird hope that there would be magic when Justin Fields stepped on the field and he would be that rookie quarterback that was going to take the Bears. And now everybody kind of has to fall back in line and wait and see. And in the meantime, we try to come up with intelligent critiques of the quarterback and not just bash everybody else on the offense, because there is culpability with the quarterback too.
Right. It's a group effort. We talked about that. Rookie right tackle, rookie running back, rookie quarterback. And there's sometimes they're not even, shouldn't even be called sacks. They should be called baggies, because there's no resistance.
Yeah.
It's just a straight line to hurt
baggies,
the quarterback.
And zip blocks.
And in two. Yeah. In
like
two
that.
Seconds, and
yep.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it. And maybe that's a barometer that to be used. There are a lot of ways you can look at whatever Justin Pace's progress will be. One of them is, Are there fewer blatant breakdowns where he doesn't recognize, doesn't sense pressure, doesn't recognize the defense, and nobody has clean shots at him? I would think that would be progress, that he has figured something out about reading defenses, changing protections, going, knowing where the hot read is. And if there are fewer baggies instead of sacks that guys actually have to fight through, that there's resistance that the Bears are putting up an effort to prevent, then I think we'll talk about progress. That's one way to look at it. I think it's one way to look at it because it'll keep them safer.
I do. All right. Now check out, let's listen to Justin Fields now on how he, as a rookie quarterback, is evaluating himself out there.
I mean, of course, things that I haven't learned yet or experienced yet, then yeah, I can give myself a break. But plays that I know I'm supposed to make a play on, or throws I know I'm supposed to make, or protections where I know I'm supposed to go with, like stuff that I know I can do, that's the stuff that frustrates me, that when I necessarily don't get it done. So of course, I'm not oblivious to the fact that I'm a rookie, that I have a lot to learn, but still at the same time, I think I'm talented enough and smart enough to be able to make, you know, right decisions on the field and be successful on the field.
Is there a play that jumps out from Sunday that is still driving you crazy a little bit?
No.
He has forgotten it all. He has put it away, and he is ready to move on to the next. I mean, I've always, like, his press conferences are very interesting now because he's a little bit of edge to him, but I think it's a good edge, and he was more full of substance, I thought, this week, even though he's kind of short with the reporters this week than he has been. He's mad, you know? He is not used to struggling himself or having an offense that struggles. So he's pissed, and he wants to earnestly do better, and he knows that there's things that he's missed.
That was Patrick Finley asking that follow-up question, right?
Finley, fair question by Pat. And, great dude. Yep.
Oh, it's a good question because what was going through my mind was asking you, what are those plays that he feels he should not be regressing in but is compared? And obviously he doesn't know the unknown unknowns and whatever he doesn't know, but the idea of what are the plays that he feels he should never be in a position to fail again. I wonder what those are. Do you have an idea? Do you have thoughts on those?
Well,
where his regrets are, or his frustrations are?
I mean, I think that we know that he likes RPOs. He does like rolling out of the pocket. So I think on those plays, he demands of himself that he, because there is a decision to be made on those, that he demands of himself that he gets those decisions right. So, we don't know exactly what it is specifically that he has forgotten about and put out of his brain. But we know what he likes to do best, and you mentioned it already, Steve, and that is to throw the ball downfield, to take, you know, all that time that he gets criticized for taking. He wants the home run play. So if he misses on those plays, I think that gets to him probably more than anything, because I think he thinks that those are the things that he does well, because we saw him do those things well at Ohio State.
Your guy Wani had talked several times on this station, both with Mully and Haw and with Parkins and Spiegel, and he had said something he had often said. He keeps repeating it, and it's not about waiting for the one thing is waiting for the Justin Fields run plays, the design quarterback runs. But the other thing is this, that he made sure that whatever their offense, whenever it was constipated, they threw deep, and he wanted it three times a quarter. That's the way he wanted it. He needed to have that to just show the other team that it's there. And I haven't heard him comment whether what they're doing is enough or just right and they haven't gotten it right, or they're, you know, he's looking at the wrong guy when he does that. Have you heard anything from your guy Wani? Because I do think it's a good, I like the policy, I like the baseline of we need to throw deep three times a quarter because that's what loosens up the defense and that opens up everything else. And Justin Fields wants to do it seemingly more than three times.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, has Wani said what he thought? It's too much, it's too little, it's disjointed. Have you heard him say anything?
I have not heard Wani say that. Wani say something interesting, though. At first, wait, let me address the downfield passing, though, real quick, the spirit of what you just asked. So the thing with Allen Robinson, the chemistry with Allen Robinson and Justin Fields just hasn't been there yet. And, you know, that's part of the downfield. I mean, it can't just be like if defenses take away Darnell Mooney downfield, then you're screwed. It can't be like that. And it's kind of been like that because they're not clicking, Allen Robinson and Justin Fields, to the degree that you would like to see them click. And I talked about this yesterday with Lawrence, that part of it is that Allen Robinson has made a career of being open when it doesn't necessarily look like he's open. And all of the Bears quarterbacks that he has dealt with, whether it's Chase Daniel or Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles or Andy Dalton or whomever, they've all figured it out. They've all figured it out that you can throw to Allen Robinson in certain spots, and for whatever reason, Justin Fields has not yet figured that out with him. Even in Jacksonville, he was able to do that with Blake Bortles. So they don't have it yet, and Fields did address that. He talked about Allen Robinson and where the chemistry is and what they're doing about it.
I don't think it's taken a while. We have solid chemistry. We just, of course, need to get better. It's not, you know, the best in the country, of course, but I mean, we're growing each and every day. So me, him, and some other receivers are going to start meeting on Zoom by ourselves and kind of start getting our own thing together. So, yeah, I mean, it's just like I said, it's going to come with time. It's that simple.
Justin, you were just talking about having these meetings with receivers on Zoom. I'm just wondering who set those up and how often are you planning on doing those?
As much as we need to, and we just talked about it collectively as a group. So just as much as we need to, and as much as we feel like we, you know, need to, you know, get our own, maybe change the routes on certain plays and stuff like that. Just as much as needed.
So that's all good. I'm glad they're doing it, but they're also, you know, they're admitting that there is an issue, Steve.
Yeah, they need to stay after school and do all that from on the field. They need to go to the playground and do there because it doesn't happen on Zoom. It happens on the field. It happens in practice. It happens with repetition. But
it's a detention.
I think the fact that the coaches don't know whether they have 12 men on the field or not, they've given – Justin Fields is a guy who seems to be quite coachable to the point where he's trying to make the right play based on the wrong information Bears coaches have yelled into his head, 12 men on the field. And, you know, Allen Robinson, you know, he fell on one of the plays, and the other one, it was, they didn't have, neither time they had 12 men on the field. It's really a bad look, and that's bad coaching. I know what they want him to do. I know that you want to be able to take advantage of it, and his instincts were, hey, we got a free play, I'm going deep, that's for sure. So I put that on the coaches. And it was bad luck. Footing was pretty bad last week, right? That was tough going. The guys didn't have the right spikes in it, seemed like, right? Weren't there guys falling down? Allen Robinson being one of them?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I was not in Tampa. I thought it was the Bears Packers game at Soldier Field where you had the famous free play, and Allen Robinson had veered left and stopped short of the end zone, and Justin Fields threw it into the back of the end zone. Actually, twice. There was the other play where, again, he throws to the end zone. Allen Robinson is just short of it, and it was the Adrian Amos interception, and then it was reversed. So it's, you know, these scramble drills, too. That is something that they're having to tighten up as well, because if Justin Fields is going to be elusive and uses athleticism, which everybody hopes he does, then that puts everybody on alert. The receivers, the assignments become different for the offensive line, and that is something that another thing that needs to be worked on for the sake of Justin Fields and adapting to the type of quarterback that he's going to be.
We also talked about the fact Justin Fields is one of the things that a rookie quarterback has to go through is what does an open receiver look like in the NFL?
Correct.
And it doesn't look open.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens. He doesn't look open, and it was always open at Ohio State. And it's not open in the NFL.
Exactly.
But yet the guy's open. And
bingo.
You had a guy who was one of the best receivers in what is regarded as contested catches, and you throw it. You know what? There's some, you know, we used to kind of chuckle at Jay Cutler saying, well, Brandon Marshall's down there, throw it up and let him go up and get it.
Right.
And that's it. But that's that's what you do with Allen Robinson. You throw it, he goes up and gets it, because that's what he does, because that's what the NFL is all about.
Exactly. And you never know when Devin Aromashadu will walk through that door. So
he's we need a tall guy through that door.
Mark. I need a tall guy, Jay Cutler.
I need to go up and get a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Devin Aromashadu, the great hope for men over 6'2".
Look at that. You're playing the Devin Aromashadu card. Look at that. On that note, we'll let the audience bathe in that. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of what Mark heard.
Good.
This is our Devin Aromashadu moment of happiness.
Would you read the text on the top of the screen to everybody really quickly, please, before we take the break?
312, Grody seems to be lapsing into his less impression unconsciously.
KMA. KMA.
We're WSCR, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. We are continuing our near award-winning segment called What Mark Heard, starring Mark Grody.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Rosenblum. We are right here on The Score. It's part of Saturday's Suckage. We thank you for joining us. We thank you for commenting on what Mark sounds like, lapsing into less impressions unconsciously. And it struck me that we should start radio station KMA, Radio Free KMA.
WKM. I was the original host at WKMA.
Anyway. Well, if we're west of the Mississippi, it could just be KMA.
KMA.
Because they all start with K's.
That's
right. KMA.
That's right.
KMA Radio.
Yeah. So our guy, Dave Wanstead, said this week. He said this week.
He's got a spot. Yeah.
That he thinks that this game tomorrow, Bears in San Francisco, is crucial for the locker room. As in, if the Bears lose, they fall to 3-5, and it's possible that the Bears could start to, quote-unquote, lose guys, as in veterans making business decisions, as opposed to going all out. If there is a helpless feeling, the human nature in the NFL, its guys tend to protect themselves. So, Olin Krutz, this question or this thesis was taken to Olin Krutz, and here's how Krutz responded to what Wani said.
You know, you start to lose a lot of games, and guys start to go in different directions. They start to worry about what's best for them and their career. So that could happen. Obviously, if these losses start to pile up here, we all know this Bears schedule is not an easy one coming up for the Chicago Bears. And, you know, the players on the team know that also. So, in short, yeah, Coach Wanstead obviously would know, you know, being the head coach of the Bears and the Miami Dolphins and then going to, obviously, on to University of Pittsburgh. But he would know that that stuff does happen. And I have been on teams where that stuff has happened, too. So trying to keep everybody moving in the right direction is obviously really hard when you start losing games.
Ooh. Wow.
Stevie?
Yeah, I expected a stronger answer from Olin. I know he said he was part of a locker room where it did happen. He didn't want to agree with Wani about the importance of the game. A flashpoint if the Bears lose this game. And a guy who's been in those locker rooms, I mean, they both have, their perspectives are valued. Wani's looking at it as a coach who has seen locker rooms be united and fractured. And Olin has been part of that as well. He's run those locker rooms. He's been that guy. And I wonder if that, he could see it happening, but he refuses to admit it. He's that focused, and for all of his normal candor, I found that interesting that he didn't put the same emphasis on it. What do you make of that?
So
he didn't put the same emphasis.
In a 17-game season, 3-5, I would not have thought about losing the locker room at that point. Like I'm a little surprised. I'm a little more surprised that Dave Wansted would say that at 3-5, and I guess that suggests that he has had that happen to him in one of his many coaching endeavors along the way. But again, in a 17-game season, like I could see it at like 3-7 or 3-8, but two games under 500 when you would still be, as dejecting as it would be to lose tomorrow, you'd still be in a spot to potentially get into the playoffs as the season went on. I don't think that's the point at which you lose a locker room. That's what I think.
I don't know. Every locker room is different. The personalities are different. And Wani made the point about business decisions. And you see it on the field, and you would see it in preparation, and you would be hard-pressed to have teammates call out teammates about guys making business decisions, but they know it inside. And I don't consider myself having a good pulse on that. But I found it interesting that Olin wouldn't go there. And Wani did.
Yeah, and I can't quite go there either, although it's, again, and I know we've said this a billion times as reporters, we're not in the locker room. So we don't have a total and complete feel of what the players are like as a collective. And even then, even being in the locker room, you don't always get a taste of it. We'll see how they play. You know what I mean? Like, if they do lose this game, it's all going to be what their play is like on the field. But will we see players making business decisions and all of that kind of stuff? From the 312, this is interesting. Come on, the locker room has been lost for 3 years. Watching all the lack of O-line nonsense, the ridiculous play calling, etc. And I don't know if that texter is referring to losing the defense, because there is a real dejection that goes on with a defense when the offense is not doing its job, or it can be reversed with some organizations, offense good, defense bad. So I don't know. I have not felt that, but who knows? I mean, it still feels like these guys, for the most part, support Matt Nagy. There are going to be guys that don't like the boss. That's just the way it works. But for the most part, it seems like they still dig Nagy.
Well, they did rally after the 6-game losing streak, and the Bears management hung all of its 2021 season on that, the collaboration and kumbaya. And speaking of the kumbaya, Matt Nagy's odd, weird, incomprehensible statement after they just got kicked in the rocks by Tampa Bay. And he's talking about, I know this, the team's never been closer in the last 24 hours or whatever that nonsense was. Remember, that's what he said after the game. Volunteered it in the post game. And he's talking about how close they are. And he was talking about what he then later explained in the week, that it was going back to Saturday night's meeting. That was right, the meetings after Saturday night before the game, right?
Correct.
So this feeling of group hug, the love, the kumbaya, we're so tight, no one's going to break us up, that they chose to receive the kick, they gave up a sack, they went 3-and-out, their special team sucked on a punt return, their defense sucked on pass interference, their run defense sucked when they gave up a long run, and then they gave up a TD, and that started their worst loss in Nagy's reign, which has had quite a few, been a reign of error in a lot of ways. The idea that he said that, it's like he's almost trying to get ahead of something, and he sounded dumber for saying that, and dumber still in the wake of what happened, that his team wasn't ready to play a game. His offense wasn't ready. His special teams weren't ready. Chris Tabor's special teams weren't ready. And his defense wasn't ready. And how could you not be ready for the best, arguably the greatest quarterback in history? Didn't that strike? I mean, that's
bonkers. Oh, yeah, it was very odd. And it of course, protected the players, but it doesn't. It's the wrong message to the fans to lose 38-3.
Oh,
and then to come out and tell the Bears fans, who are all listening and wanting to know a little explanation for what the hell just happened, and he's telling everybody that the team is closer than ever. Now, his defense was that the question that came in had something to do with losing the locker room or losing his team in a game like this. So he said that he needed to say how close they were in regards to that. But unfortunately, yeah, you have to – guess what? You got to come out and say that that game sucked and it was just no good and there's no excuse for that. The offense was bad. The defense was bad. I was bad. Like, that's the message that, you know, quite frankly, the team needs too, not just – and because the players know. Mm-hmm. You know, he's pandering to the players. They know it sucked and they know it was bad. They don't – they're grown men. They don't need to hear about how close they became on Saturday night. They need to know that what just happened is not excusable in a Chicago Bears uniform, and it can never happen again. And if it does, people are going to be sitting down on the bench. That's the right message.
Right, but I'm laughing. You're right. It is the right message, and I'm laughing because the thought, what I didn't say earlier, the thought that went through my head was the scene from Step Brothers. Did we just become best friends? And that's what I'm thinking, that it just is that big of a comedy that he's running up there. It's just part of the clown college.
Yeah, I got to think, but it was after a game last year that it was a bad defense. I think it was maybe it was 2 years ago. My God, it all mushes together. There was a bad defensive effort, and Matt Nagy, it was the one time Matt Nagy kind of went off. You remember that? And he was.
I think it was it was last year, early in the year. His offense still sucked, but he was hanging it on the defense.
Yes.
I can't remember which game it is.
I wonder if that's kind of scared him away for good from blasting his players. Like, he did it once. It didn't feel good for him because he is like this inherently, you know, his core is positivity, which we know, and that angers everybody. So, like, he did it once. It exhausted him. He, you know, took a lot of criticism because it was him ripping the defense. So I do wonder if that kind of traumatized Nagy a little bit to, like, never do that again.
Well, he won't be there to do it after tomorrow's game because Chris Tabor will be your head coach.
Wow.
So do you have more? We have one more.
I got one more.
Final.
Uno más. All right, I got one more, and this is kind of getting old by now, but it really wasn't addressed much this week, and that was the Eddie Jackson addressing his little feud with Lance Briggs. Briggs on over on NBC Sports Chicago was very critical of the lack of tackling prowess by Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson then tweeted out some tackling numbers from Pro Football Focus in about Lance Briggs later in his career with all the missed tackles he had had. Jackson took a lot of criticism for that, eventually took down the tweet, and then Eddie Jackson finally was asked about it. Here it is.
I wouldn't say too much of regret, you know, because I feel like, you know, it's football, you know, and for me, the type of player I am, I feel like you should never question my effort. You know, making a tackle, I know I have to make that tackle. You know, that's don't nobody go out there and want to miss a tackle. You know, you have to get the guy on the ground. So, but when it comes to questioning effort and playing ability, when we all been here before, you know, we all as players, we all know how it feels. You know, when you're going out there, you laying everything on the line, trying to be aggressive. You know, things like that is going to happen, but you just got to go out there and make your plays. And like I said, when the effort part gets the question, that's the part that I have to say something about. But you know, I could take direct criticism. I went to Alabama. Coach Saban is the biggest, you know, he always, you know, coaches us on that. You got to learn how to take direct criticism. So it's not about that. It's just about the effort part. And, you know, like I said, we just got to continue to fight and push through and block all that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, there's no bigger indictment, Steve, than somebody, any of us, questioning one's effort. So, I mean, Briggs was right. For sure, he's got to get better at tackling, but you could hear what he took exception to.
Yeah, but I think it was a straw man. Eddie Jackson built a straw man. I didn't interpret what Lance said as questioning the effort. He questioned the execution. You have to make that tackle no matter what, and you have to make that tackle. And that's execution. That's making a decision to make that tackle, to take the best possible line. I didn't interpret that as effort at all. I think he would have... They have on that football after show made a point of whether guys are, they think they're trying or not, or whether there's effort. And I didn't interpret that at all. I think that was just.
Well, most guys will say, and I don't know, they probably said something like this during that show, that tackling is effort and want to. Like, it's a huge part. It's inherently part of it. So somehow that's what Eddie Jackson heard. But more importantly, Steve.
All right, well, make tackles and you don't get good.
Yeah, what? Yeah, exactly. More importantly, I was going to say, good afternoon, Mark and Steve from the 630. Mark, what are you going to be for Halloween? Benjamin texting from Elmhurst. What about you? What about Steve? I mean, Steve
no,
might
Mark,
be.
You're the,
oh, Mark and
you're
Steve.
Mark, you're, yeah.
Yeah, Mark, what are you? No,
Mark,
I,
what are
I'm
you going to be for Halloween?
I'm out. I'm out. Nothing.
Yeah,
I got
I'm
nothing.
I'm going to be quiet for Halloween. That's what I'm going to be.
You've done everybody a favor.
I'm
going to
be eating candy. All right, we need to take a break. We come back. So here's what's planned for the rest of the show, Saturday's Suckageers. We're going to come back. I have a Chris Tabor question for Mark, and we'll see if he can answer it. And then at the top of the hour, Suckageers, I had a really rough week that I want some help with. It was I need some Saturday Suckageers for group therapy, and I need to lay down on Dr. Grody's couch. And can we do that? Can you have time for my therapy, Dr. Grody?
I do. I do. I am looking forward to that conversation.
All right. We will have that. First, we have a Bears question coming up, and we'll see where that takes us. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. This is Saturday Suckage. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Cesar Perez. Very well played. We just become best friends. That was the only thing missing from that mind-bogglingly out of place and stupid and the kumbaya statement of historically pathetic Bears coach Matt Nagy after they got beat worse than they ever had in the Matt Nagy era last week at Tampa Bay. And I know one thing, last 24, 48 hours, we've never been closed. This team's never been tighter. Yeah, they were so tight that all three phases screwed up the first chance they got, and you allowed the arguably the best quarterback in NFL history to just have his way with you, and you embarrassed yourselves. And anyway, so the news this week is the historically pathetic Matt Nagy will not be allowed on the field. He's still in COVID protocol. That's the news that broke today. Breaking news on The Score is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Protect your privacy online for free with DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. So, in Matt Nagy's place will be Chris Tabor, the special teams coach. Yet another special teams coach as a head coach, at least for one day. And I have the question, Mark Grody.
Yes.
I'm revisiting a question that we asked earlier about Chris Tabor. How wide is this? How much of head coach does he get to head coach? How wide are his decision-making ability? And then we sort of drilled down and said, it's fourth and one. Do you go for it? Or does the special teams coach call for the special teams? and I wonder, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but I'm going to bring it up. Because sometimes when you go for it, you have no faith in your defense. You're making that offensive call based on the fact that your bad offense is better than your bad defense if you haven't stopped anybody.
Or,
now, we don't know what it'll play like, but I just wonder, we don't have any idea how that factors in, but it could factor in the way the defense is playing. Or, as you said...
Or the Bears are desperate to score points because the Bears don't score points. So they have to do everything possible to get them closer to scoring points. That is the problem. And I'm sorry for now going into Alec. All you have to do is put the ball in the end zone and you will score points. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I came in with Will Ferrell and Step Brothers, and now we're at Will Ferrell.
I'm having trouble being me today. I was Grobber earlier, and now I'm Alex Trebek, Will Ferrell style. Yeah. They have to score points. I've never, ever, ever in this season or even last season been mad when the Bears went for it on fourth down. Now, the many times that they did bad plays to attempt to get that 1 yard, hike it to, or spike it a couple yards back, or excuse me, hike it a couple yards back and then attempt to get those yards that you just lost, that was not very smart. So I think Chris Tabor, yes, Chris Tabor will get to make those decisions because somebody has to. There's not enough time on an NFL field in that moment to huddle up and decide what you're going to do. Some of it does have to land on Chris Tabor. Will Chris Tabor be in on what's going on with the offensive play calling? I don't think so. I think that they probably said, look, Bill's got this. This is not your area of expertise. I think the same thing with defense in terms of Sean Desai. They're not going to let Chris Tabor overrule decisions there. But when it comes down to the biggest decisions of the game, that has to be in Chris Tabor's hands.
You know, we talked earlier about, it was brought up, you had Wani talking about it's such a big game because he could lose a locker room if the Bears lose this game. Olin Kruse not willing to go there, although he's familiar with that feeling. He just didn't place it on this game. He knows it could happen, but like you said, more likely at 3-8 as opposed to 3-4.
And a texter made a good point about that, Stevie, and that is that maybe it's you lose this game and the schedule is just kind of a bitch the rest of the way.
Right. Well, it already has been. You started with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. I mean, that's so whatever. If you win this, the schedule's still a bitch. So where do you come down on this, or what do you think the importance is? That much has been made of Bilal Nichols getting kicked out for responding. So that's another ejection, the third in less than two seasons for this team, for Matt Nagy's team, and the fifth in his time, which is second only to Miami in having players ejected. So you talk about the Bears' culture. That would seem to point to Bears' culture sucking, Matt Nagy's culture sucking, Ted Phillips talking about the culture, and it sucks. The discipline sucks. Or not. Where do you think that figures into this discussion? Is it just an easy flashpoint, or does it matter more than just something that would be shrugged off?
No, I do think that there are some things that you could put directly on a head coach, and that is discipline and, as you said, culture. And they have boasted about their culture forever and the no turds formation that they have tried to
I forgot about that.
But they made a big deal about that and have made a big deal about it. So when Javon Wims and Anthony Miller are punching guys and you had Akeem Hicks with multiple personal fouls last year, you had Kyle Long throwing a helmet at somebody in a practice at one point in time, yeah, that goes back to the coach. And, yeah, there's nobody else who has to answer for that. I mean, obviously the individual players do, but if you're going to brag about culture and discipline, then when things are not disciplined and culture is not good, of course, 100% that lands on the head coach.
So it'd be interesting to see if somebody does that tomorrow, or if they're extremely well disciplined for the substitute teacher, because I don't know if they look at it like a substitute teacher.
That's right? So funny you say that, because I thought about that too. Like, will they be more on their game? Like, let's do it for Tabes. Let's do it for Matt Nagy, who's at home. Or is it, okay, now I don't have to do this when I'm on the sideline.
It's recess.
Now I don't have to stand here. Now I can go hang out with my guy over here. Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know what the mentality is with players when the substitute coach is in.
And how special teams coaches have a reputation. I mean, Ditka is the most pronounced.
Sure.
But special teams coaches have a reputation of that kind of brutal honesty. You're talking about how animated Chris Tabor is.
Yeah, he's very animated.
And
yes.
We know there's more that goes along with that, and there's a ferocity about that. And does that build respect or not? I don't know. It differs from player to player, but be interested to see how that plays out. But I keep thinking we're talking substitute teachers, and we're talking about such a change. We have Matt Nagy's kumbaya to Chris Tabor. I just imagine him being a volcano. And I remember when the Blackhawks replaced Alpo Suhonen with Brian Sutter.
You can't even say Alpo's name without laughing, can you?
I can't. It's as laughable as Jeremy Colleton. And so Alpo Suhonen to Brian Sutter, or any of the Sutters. In this case, it was Brian Sutter. And at that press conference, they introduced Brian Sutter. Tony Amonte was there. And we asked, what do you think? And he says, recess is over.
That's what he said.
And it was so true.
And they made the playoffs, and then they lost to Joel Quenneville's Blues. They got shut out in three straight games.
Was that the ABC line? So, Arneson, Bell, Calder? Was that what that was?
That would come in later, and then there would be the fight in Nashville and the punch.
Oh, my God, Sutter, yeah. Sutter was a badass, yes. Yeah.
So as long as we're here, as long as we're at the crossroads of this, I need to talk about the Hawks.
Yes.
I need to talk about the morally bankrupt Hawks. I need to talk about the cowards and the absolutely cold-hearted, the despicable and depraved environment that existed and exists, and how it hit me this week. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't know. But I would ask you, Dr. Grody, to allow me to lay down on your couch. And I would ask our audience, our Saturday Suckageers. Normally, we're givers, not takers. I need you to give me your thoughts on this when I'm done, as I sort of run through what happened. I don't want to avoid this story, but this affected me. This came off feeling more personal, whether it should have or not. And I was affected as a parent more than I was surprised, and not really as a, you know, an observer, a journalist, or anything like that, as a professional. This was quite the jolt. So, can I have some time on your couch, Dr. Grody?
Oh, yeah, man. I've been looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this, just because I was thinking about you, because I know how much hockey has kind of meant to you throughout your life growing up, and obviously having covered a ton of Blackhawks and one of the more knowledgeable, I'll say it, the most knowledgeable hockey person in this city. So to have had this tragedy occur, to have, yep, I'll use your words, moral bankruptcy occur with the Blackhawks and all the awful people involved. Like, you've been asking me a lot of Bears questions. I want to ask you a lot of questions about what went down. But you know what? I'm a listener, Steve. So I'm gonna have you sit on the couch, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about the morally bankrupt Blackhawks.
Thank you, Dr. Grody, and thank you, audience, fellow Suckageers. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with that. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans! You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.